The unsurpassed, perfect, and imperfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Thank you for all coming this morning to join us in honoring great master Bodhidharma and listen to his profound teachings in our music this morning. Very inspirational. I'd like to offer some reflections on great master Bodhidharma, on the practice of meditation, which he transmitted to us, and on how we can use that meditation practice in our daily lives to help us through difficult situations in just one little way. So I thought that meditation, basically, would be a very appropriate subject for Bodhidharma Day. Right here, right now, we still hear the echoes of Bodhidharma's 9 years facing a wall. Great Master Bodhidharma transmitted the tradition of Soto Zen, or as we translate, serene reflection meditation, from India to China near the beginning of the 6th century of this era. He took a 3-year-long sea voyage to get there, it's said. He's the 28th Indian ancestor from Shakyamuni Buddha and the first Chinese ancestor in our lineage of the Zen tradition of Buddhism. And Zen is a word that simply means meditation. Zen means meditation. It's derived from the Chinese chan, which is a transliteration of jhana, a Sanskrit word, for the type of themeless meditation that we do in our practice. We venerate Bodhidharma for his gift to us of the true and shining treasure of this practice of meditation. Where would we be without it? His gift to us is beyond measure. There is much legend surrounding Bodhidharma, and shining throughout all the stories is his devotion to the practice of seated meditation. My impression is of a simple monk, wearing one single robe sufficient for cover, but nothing fancy, teaching a simple practice that anyone can do, and relying on that practice as the gateway to liberation from suffering. Images portray him with a fierce expression that to me suggests a single-minded awareness that time is short. Let's get on with it. If you see the portrait behind me on the altar, this is a monk that means business. I live in a monastic residence hall that's named after great Master Bodhidharma, called the Bodhidharma Hall. And when you open the front door, on the facing wall to that front door, is where that portrait usually hangs. So you open the front door, and when I'm mindful enough, opening that front door, not thinking of 10,000 other things, I can take a look at that portrait and ground myself. Even when I am thinking of 10,000 other things, just look at that portrait. It's very helpful. Okay. This is the face of someone who is fully engaged with what is before him, right here, right now. His wide open eyes speak of being awake. This is his transmission of the Buddha mind, the awakened mind. Bodhidharma was the son of a devout Buddhist king of southern India. When the king died and all were lamenting his death, Bodhidharma sat in meditation for 7 days beside his bier. Afterwards, he went to his teacher, Hanyatara, to seek monastic ordination. Although Hanyatara recognized Bodhidharma's inherent wisdom, he waited until the time was ripe to receive him as a disciple. Having received ordination, Bodhidharma once again sat in meditation for 7 days in his teacher's dwelling. And we have here in Shasta Abbey a custom where when a new person comes, for example, a new postulant who enters as a postulant, or a newly ordained monk, we invite them to have what we call a week of tangario, a word that means silence. And so someone new to the temple as a postulant or new to the monastic life as a newly ordained monk is able to spend 7 days in silence. So already, Bodhidharma's actions show his reliance on meditation practice. He served and studied with his master until Hanyatara's death, and I think it was some 40 years. He then embarked upon a 3-year sea voyage to take him to southern China, where he transmitted the Buddha mind in that land. This is wondrous to consider, because in that day, this was in the early 6th century, and that's 15 centuries ago. If you think of 15 centuries, that's quite a while ago. Buddhism was there in India, where it eventually almost died out. We didn't have any of the myriad means of communication we had today. There were no telephones, no internet, no television, no radio, nothing like that. And so consider the call of the Dharma to bring a teacher like Bodhidharma from India to southern China to transmit the Dharma to beings. And I think of that, and I think of how great Master Dogen, several centuries later, also took a perilous sea voyage from Japan to China to seek for the truth there, brought it back to Japan, our tradition of meditation. And then, many more centuries later, Reverend Master Jiyu took a long sea voyage from England to Malaysia and then Japan in order to transmit the Dharma to us here in the West. So 15 centuries ago, Bodhidharma transmitted the Buddha mind, and we still hear the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall. How do we hear the echoes of 9 years sitting in silent meditation? It's a good question, and you can sit with it. It's a good question. Hearing the echoes of 9 years facing a wall. It is said that Bodhidharma went to see the Emperor Wu of Liang in China, who asked him some questions. The emperor said, "Who are you facing me?" Bodhidharma said, "Don't know." The emperor didn't understand. Bodhidharma subsequently crossed the Yangtze River into northern China, which was probably a good idea because emperors in general aren't too happy with being kind of stumped, you know, where he came to Shaolin Monastery and faced a wall for 9 years. The monks of Shaolin wondered what he was doing because they weren't familiar. They hadn't yet learned this practice. And they called him the wall-gazing monk. We still hear the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall. Several centuries later, as I mentioned, Great Master Dogen heard the echoes of Bodhidharma's 9 years facing a wall. He too traveled by sea to China, where he learned the practice of shikantaza, or just sitting, And he brought this back to his native country, Japan. Still more centuries later, Reverend Master Jiyu traveled by sea from England through Malaysia to Japan, where she spent several years facing a wall, hearing the echoes of Bodhidharma's silent teaching. She, too, sat with her master, as Bodhidharma had done, until the master's death, sitting still as a mountain in the midst of difficult conditions. She then transmitted the Buddha mind to us here in the West. Because of Reverend Master Jiyu's transmission, right here in this hall, we can hear the echoes of Bodhidharma's 9 years facing a wall. Just as Great Master Dogen heard them, just as Great Master Jiyu heard them. And by the way, when I think of how many people and sentient beings have been affected in a very positive way by this teaching transmitted through all these great masters. One day, as a guest office monk, I was giving a tour here, and the fellow who came for the tour said that he was here to take photographs because he had a friend in Australia who knew he would never make it to Shasta Abbey all the way from Australia. But he had learned meditation from Reverend Master Jiyu when she was the foreign guest master at Sojiji in Japan in the 1960s. Apparently he'd been in the service or something. And so when he went, when this friend of the tour man's went back to Australia, he not only kept up his meditation practice, but he started a little meditation group in his neighborhood where he taught other people to sit with him. So I was quite moved by this because I thought, how many people that we never hear of are sitting in meditation facing a wall today because of Reverend Master Jiyu, because of Great Master Dogen, because of Great Master Bodhidharma, because of Shakyamuni Buddha. We still hear the echoes. In the Rules for Meditation, Great Master Dogen says, although Bodhidharma transmitted the Buddha mind, we still hear the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall. We can take a moment to think of this, hearing the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall, hearing silent sound, the echoes of Bodhidharma's practice resound through time and space to reach us here, right now, in this hall. Sitting in meditation is hearing the echoes of Bodhidharma's 9 years facing a wall. Anytime, anywhere, stopping for a moment amidst the clamor of busy life, in the midst of whatever conditions may arise, to take a deep breath and reset oneself in meditation is hearing the echoes of Bodhidharma's 9 years facing a wall. Anytime, anywhere, keeping to the precepts and doing what needs to be done is hearing the echoes of Bodhidharma's 9 years facing a wall. So what is this practice that echoes through time and space, and how does it guide and help us? Some time ago, I wrote down three quotations that were kind of tickling my mind. Those were, think of neither good nor evil, consider neither right nor wrong. And that comes from Great Master Dogen's Rules for Meditation. Those are very important lines of scripture for me. The next one is, the way to the ultimate is hard. Simply give up picking and choosing. Just by not giving in to hatred and craving will your heart and mind be as clear and bright as the realm beyond the opposites. And those lines come from the poem, That Which Is Engraved Upon the Heart That Trusts to the Eternal, by Great Master Kanshi Sosan. The next one is very familiar to many of you. When one with deepest wisdom of the heart that is beyond discriminative thought, the Holy Lord, Great Kanzeon Bosatsu, knew that the skandhas five were, as they are, in their self-nature, void, unstained, and pure. That comes from the Heart Sutra, or Scripture of Great Wisdom, that we chant at morning service. The key phrase here is beyond discriminative thought. Think of neither good nor evil. Consider neither right nor wrong. Simply give up picking and choosing. I'm glad those words are put in simple terms because it helps us to turn our energy to actually doing them rather than trying to memorize a lot of adjectives and adverbs. Simply give up picking and choosing. Reflecting on why these three quotations had been coming to my mind and kind of sticking there, I thought that I could see how the words pointed to a relationship between pure meditation, the type of themeless meditation that we do, the simple practice of facing a wall and watching the mind, and what can be called the judgmental mind, or the mind under the sway of ignorance, perhaps what Bodhidharma meant by the mind stained. Just sitting with no deliberate thought is the important aspect of serene reflection meditation. This also comes from the Rules for Meditation of Great Master Dogen. So just sitting with no deliberate thought. Simple. This is a simple practice, and monks here sometimes say simple, not easy. This is it. Nothing more is needed. I know some of you have heard this before, that in my early years of practice here, I would sometimes or maybe often judge myself as making no progress in meditation, a failure. I was even more miserable than I had been before I came here to seek the cessation of suffering. So I'd get fed up and I'd go to see one of the senior monks for counseling, and the senior monk would always tell me the same thing, just keep doing your meditation. I wanted to say, pish tosh. I mean, you know, I've been doing my meditation for however long. It wasn't 9 years yet, but however long. But, I would hear the words, just keep doing your meditation. I'd bow, go away frustrated, and just keep sitting on my cushion anyway, maybe even just to prove them wrong. Who knows? But I just kept sitting on my cushion anyway. These things are bigger than we are. And now, may I also take this opportunity to say thank you to all the patient monks who understood all those years ago that the student has to find out for themselves. And they find out by just keep sitting on your cushion. And who had the patience to sit with me through those rocky years. This simple practice is what Bodhidharma brought to China, what Dogen brought from China to Japan, and what Ho-un Ji-yu brought from Japan to the West, just sitting with no deliberate thought. Simple, not easy. Bodhidharma's fierce expression tells us that it's not easy. He's not sitting there in a pleasant daydream, if you see his face. We just finished a 3-day meditation retreat. And at times, even 1 30- or 40-minute meditation period can feel like 9 years facing a wall. All those fascinating thoughts, emotions, and stories to follow. All those aches and pains and worries to push away. Sitting here in this dim light when it's such a beautiful day outside. And at such moments, this simple practice calls forth from us our finest aspiration, to set aside that which we know is false, to relinquish fantasy and live in harmony with that which is real. Now back to the quotations, a bit about judgmental mind. In last week's talk, Reverend Master Ando made a mention of judgmental mind. And this always hits home with me because I'm very familiar with judgmental mind. So think of neither good nor evil. Consider neither right nor wrong. The way to the ultimate is not hard. Simply give up picking and choosing. Just by not giving in to hatred and craving will your heart and mind be as clear and bright as the realm beyond the opposites. And also, when the opposites arise, the Buddha mind is lost. The judgmental mind is the home of the opposites. It's the generator of the opposites, good and evil, right and wrong, left and right, dark and light, up and down. I mean, there's a million of them. The Buddha mind seems to be lost. It's just obscured. When judgmental mind takes charge and we believe what it tells us. Bodhidharma spoke of the mind stained. With what is this mind stained? The karmic inheritance we bring into this lifetime and the cultural conditioning we absorb as we're socialized in childhood and beyond leave us, quote, stained, unquote, with the sticky residue of previous harmful, unskillful thoughts, words, and actions. Never mind if they're mine or somebody in a lifetime centuries ago. We are here to help them be converted. So these sticky residues, think of how fabric absorb and is discolored by a greasy substance. I probably have such things right here. So the five skandhas, or component parts of what we see as ourselves, can be stained by beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. We learn in this particular culture that it's important to compete, to win, to be right, or to suffer the disgrace of humiliation. There's a small example that came to mind. In this, we have a society based on consumer economics. And there's a lot of value placed in this consumer society on always getting the best deal, the most value for the lowest price. This can be grounds for feeling proud and boasting. In my earlier life, I remember lunchtime conversations at workplaces where people would compare stories of how cheaply they got this or that, you know. And I used to think, oh boy, that makes them pretty good at shopping. As someone who placed more value, first of all, I must say that I had the financial resources to sustain this attitude, but placing more value on quality than on low cost, and not being a very good shopper and having no tolerance whatsoever for the act of shopping, I used to feel a little bit embarrassed about actually paying full price for something, and I would never admit that I had done so. I'd feel compelled never to reveal that. And let me say, this is different from the fine value of thrift or frugality, which is fine. This is because it partakes of proud of oneself and devalue others, or it's reverse, proud of others and devaluing oneself for any particular thing. So we need to, you know, we're brought up to judge, to compete, to be right. It's right to get something at the lowest possible cost. Not, you know. The way to the ultimate is easy. Simply give up picking and choosing. Ignorance is the foundation of the judgmental mind. Judging something or someone as good or evil obscures our view of the true heart of all beings. Judgmental mind is delusive thought. Delusive thought, if lost, abandoned, will all satisfaction bring. Judgmental mind coerces or entices beings to rely on opinions, emotions, and ideas, compelling us to grasp what we judge as good or right, and reject what we judge as evil or wrong. Meditation allows us to accept both good and evil, right and wrong, from what Reverend Master G. U. called the third position. As we go about the process of watching our minds and converting our beginningless greeds, hates, and delusions, we need to accept both the awful things and the superb things we learn, recall, or experience about ourselves, things we've done, thought, and said. We need to be able to accept the awful things without judging, able to understand that we've caused harm to others and ourselves in order to be motivated deep inside our hearts to really do something about ourselves. We need to be able to see the superb acts that we're proud of, our wonderful qualities, without giving way to elation and pride, in order to convert these things. So I think this is enough for this morning. Bodhidharma did not teach the Dharma in words, but just by sitting, doing silent meditation, and keeping the precepts, he taught the truth to all around. So there's a little bit of irony in kind of giving a talk on what Bodhidharma did. He did not try to explain the Dharma in words. Instead, by just keeping the precepts and doing silent meditation, he taught all around. He taught all around him. For this, we bow in gratitude for his great compassion, and we continue to hear the echoes of his 9 years facing a wall. Thank you.